Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Their energy was powering one of their next events. I think it's down to that kind of science with these people, that kind of occultic science. They're smart. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Now, even down to the stone pillars. Now, like I said, I reached out to the artist. I didn't tell him that I was completely dismantling his art as a conspiracy to basically show that all these events are a ritual to Lucifer. When I was talking to him, he has no idea that I was doing that. But while I was talking to him, he told me what the pillars represented. They were supposed to be, the first thing he said was, well, they're not phallic, even though they're literally obelisks in the woods, almost like a witch's pillar. You can say they're not phallic. That screams phallic representation to me. But he said they were upside down, or like graves that were pulled out of the ground and set on top of it. I believe most of these events are all scripts. I know it's hard for a lot of people to hear. I can't hide behind the whole, oh, well, people may have died, so I gotta be nice about it. I don't think people actually died that day.
You just heard today's guest, an independent researcher and conspiracy theorist, who joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this conversation with Matthew Lane. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. I'm your host, Mystic Mark, and joining me today is our guest, Matthew Lane, who's going to be telling us about a couple of different things. He's got one story he wants to save for last, but before we get into what you have to share with us today, give us a 101 on what brings you here, who you are. Nice to meet you. Thanks for joining me and all that good stuff.
Thanks for having me, especially on kind of a short notice and kind of late at night. But my name is Matthew Lane. I'm pretty much a nobody. I just happened to be following a lot of podcasts for a very long time. Started getting interested in my own area of Kent, Ohio, as well as Akron, Ohio, Cleveland, surrounding areas. Mark, you quite inspired me on like some of your past shows, telling people, you know, go do some research and bring it to me. Let's get this thing started. Let's figure out what this is all about. And that's what I did. Whoop, you there?
I'm here.
Oh, shoot. Sorry. Computer just kicked me off Zoom, I thought, for a second. I just started digging, and then I wasn't finding too much, just some basic stuff about the hometown I grew up in, like the landscape, learning about geomancy from people like Michael Wan and Ross Benn, and the 40th parallel stuff. I started looking at my hometown of Kent, Ohio, which happens to have its own Standing Rock, which is just a rock formation. It's one decent sized rock in the middle of a river where there are no other rocks around it. It's so important that they named the cemetery they put in front of it after it, Standing Rock Cemetery. And the Standing Rock itself used to be a meeting grounds area for surrounding Native American tribes. So this rock is very important and mysterious on top of it, along with the Cuyahoga River that it sits in. We have hills everywhere with important buildings on it, one being the Freemasonic Temple. It was built by Marvin Kent, the supposed founder of Kent, Ohio. He's famous for bringing the railroads through Kent and setting up the railroad station that kind of built Kent into what it is today. Upon a little more digging, it seems like Mr. Marvin Kent was a shady character. He actually kind of stole the entire township from another family called the Haymakers. He was also friends with Carnegie Mellon, who donated quite a substantial amount of money to build our local library. So just with that little bit of information there, it's quite intriguing, especially when you get Carnegie's name in the mix. Well, the past couple of years, I've just been kind of looking for my purpose, Mark, and being in this conspiracy realm, listening to podcasts all day, every day at work, quite like yourself, driving around, making deliveries, listening to podcasts all day. I've been inspired by this stuff for a very long time. I just work in a steel shear shop for 8 to 12 hours a day and listen to podcasts. So I finally decided to do more than listen and kind of join this huge community that's building in the conspiracy podcast realm, I should say. And pretty recently, this Kent State story fell in my lap. Now, I grew up in Kent, and I've always known about the May 4th, 1970 Kent State massacre, and I've always questioned it. I've known for quite a few years now that it was one of the many events that they staged for great importance for their own cause. What I didn't know about was a memorial dedicated to the four people who died that day that sits in the woods, not on campus. It sits in the woods called Towner's Woods. It was used to be a farm. The owner of the land gave it back to the city and let it be reforested to be turned into a park. This park also has ancient Indian burial mounds, one of which used to contain a Indian princess. And it also sits next to a lake called Lake Pippin. Me knowing words have very specific meanings, I instantly Googled, what does Pippin mean? It's more than a basketball player. Pippin just means a red to yellowish ripe apple. Oh, apple. Okay, that's interesting. So I really started digging into this art in the woods. I started looking up who the artist was who put it there. And it's just been nonstop finding information. I just found more information right before I got on the call with you. Gosh, I don't know where you want me to go from here. We can talk about May 4th and how it was a complete fraud. And then lead into the art.
Yeah,
let's. And all the connections I've made with the art.
Let's, before we get into that, for people who might not remember or never heard, could you remind us exactly what the Kent State massacre was?
Yes, absolutely. So this was right around when we invaded Cambodia, and they had just done a draft the year before in September. So there were, once spring hit, there were protests on college campuses absolutely everywhere. So it was basically protest over the war, the nonstop war, Vietnam, Korea, and then leading in, once they invaded Cambodia, even more shit hit the fan. There were riots, protests on every college campus across the country. So what happened at Kent State, it ended all of that. So on May 4th, 1970, after a long weekend of protests, not just on campus, but in the city itself, causing havoc to the public and the townspeople, once classes started back up on Monday, there were still small protests, and they brought the National Guard on campus during the weekend. A supposed group of protesters and students burnt down the ROTC building, I believe on Saturday evening. And that kind of led to what happened on Monday. Four students were shot dead by our own National Guard, nine injured, one of which was paralyzed. A person who was paralyzed actually became a very important person in politics down the road. I will get into him here in a little bit. But after looking at this whole event, and I'll give you more detail here in a second, they completely staged this event to end the 1960s civil rights movements. It completely changed American history, and barely any of you know about it. It was basically the 9/11 of the 1970s. And I do believe it's connected to 9/11 as well as JFK, and I'll get into that as well also here shortly. So, let's see, I'm sorry, give me one second. Let me flip through my notes here. On Saturday, there was a supposed rumors of the Weathermen, who was supposed to come to town. They were a black civil rights group for the most part that started in Michigan. And people were spreading rumors saying they were supposed to show up that day, but apparently they never did. Also on that Saturday, there were protests in the middle of downtown Kent. And Kent back in the 70s was well known for their bars. There were over 53 bars just in the small downtown area of Kent, Ohio, along with other shops that were either had their windows broken in, fire started in, which all started once a motorcycle group that came to town started doing bike tricks in the middle of the street and getting people riled up. Where is the name of that? I apologize. They had a very specific name to the group that was kind of important here, and I apologize, I can't find where it's at now. I will find that in a second too. So I'm going to fast forward to the ROTC building fire. Now, the fire itself obviously wasn't an accident. There was even policemen and firefighters who were allowing these people to try to burn down the building. Now, the building was put up during World War II. It was made out of old rickety wood. It looked like it could go up in flames at any time. And the people that were being malicious towards the building were pretty much dressed in all black. You couldn't tell who they were whatsoever. And nobody was really trying to stop them. Let's see here. I'm going to get into them. There was a KSU police detective confirmed that the campus police stood by merely observing the scene for more than an hour while demonstrators tried to burn down the building and harass the firemen. Persons involved in the actual incineration were few and were separated from the main crowd and could have easily been apprehended by the police. Now, also leading up to this day, they also had the governor of Ohio fly in and take pictures with the building once it was burnt down. Good grief, there it is. All right. So the Ohio governor, James A. Rhodes, flew into Kent, or right outside of Kent. There's a Kent State Airport, just a city away. So he flies in, takes pictures with the burnt down building that they burnt down on Saturday, and then immediately calls in the National Guard. Once the National Guard gets there, things really start getting riled up. We have things like demands from the students. Have constant combating between the soldier, the National Guardsmen and the students. The students obviously have nothing but rocks and sticks to throw at the National Guard, but they were doing anything to get them back. Now, around 10:30 p.m. that night, the students borrowed a bullhorn from the police and issued a list of non-negotiable demands. Their demands were to stop the war in Vietnam, abolish the university's ROTC program, and remove the National Guard from campus. Now, obviously, none of those things happened. The reason why that 10:30 timestamp is important is I'm big into numerology and knowing that these guys use their numbers kind of like signs, symbols, and markers for all of the events that take place. The number 13, once you take away the zeros in 10:30, it played a big part in this event. I'll get to that here in a second. Now, the event of the ROTC building was obviously planned. They had a meeting with all the town's officials, the chief of fire, the firefighting department, the police chief, the sheriff. They all got together and had a meeting at the fire station hours before the fire took place. And that fire basically set the precedence for what happened on Monday. Now, I'm going to fast forward to Monday here. It was pretty early in the day. Classes had just started. The National Guard was all over the place. They had been up all night the night before dealing with the fire and keeping peace Sunday night from a lot of the protests that were still continuing. Even after they put a campus word I'm looking for, where they you have to go be inside at a certain time. Curfew. Jeez. They all had to be in at a certain time, but the students were not listening. They were out all night giving the National Guard a pretty hard time. So when Monday came around, classes started. National Guard were already on high alert. The students had started another protest, even though they had been warned there were absolutely no more protests that were supposed to happen that day. Well, National Guard, obviously, their commanding officer told them to get up and start moving. They marched up a hill, which happens to be the tallest hill on campus, which Taylor Hall sits on. They marched up Victory Hill. No, it's not Victory Hill. The name of the hill is pretty important. Hold on. Sorry, they marched up Blanket Hill, where some of the soldiers set up right next to a pagoda. The rest of the soldiers walked down the hill into the courtyard, made a huge circle, came back to the pagoda, and within moments started shooting at the students without warning. Now, this is what got me to really look into this. These soldiers shot 67 shots for 13 seconds, killing 4 people and injuring 9. That's 13, 13, 13. I don't know what makes the number 13 important with this event. I'm still looking that part up, trying to figure out the relevance of that. But that's definitely, in my eyes, a marker for, hey, we did this. That's definitely a wink and a nod, in my view. Now, the interesting part of this whole story, too, is that the 4 people who died, it was Jeffrey Miller, Allison Krause, Sandra Schuer, and William Schroeder. 2 of which attended JFK high schools in different states, and all 4 of them were Jewish. I don't know if you have any comments for that, but I found that extremely interesting. Now, let's see. A few things about the different students. Allison Krause, she is famous for being pictured putting a flower or being seen putting a flower in the barrel of somebody's gun and saying the words, "Flowers are better than bullets." That ended up being kind of a meme throughout the 70s, to the point where later on in media, the movie The Watchmen depicted this entire event with one quick scene of a girl putting a flower into the barrel of a gun and all of the guardsmen pulling the triggers at the students. That is in the opening scene of The Watchmen. Now, the next one was Jeffrey Glenn Miller. And he's most famous in this because of the way he died. He was shot in the mouth, supposedly. And he was the one who was pictured in the Pulitzer Prize winning photo of the unidentified girl kneeling down next to him screaming. If you really study those pictures, it looks as staged as Trump's supposed assassination attempt. I saw a video recently where a guy ran off camera for a second and comes back in with photographers, and he's literally leading the photographers around on where to take the pictures of Trump. If you have eyes to see, you can tell that's a staged moment. I could only imagine what onlookers were seeing in that moment, like the photographers that were taking the pictures and what was going on around the actual scene. Probably tells a bigger story than the actual picture that we were all shown that day. And it gets kind of strange, though. The girl in the photo, you see here, let me look up her name real quick. She was a 14-year-old runaway who ended up on campus. Her name was Mary Ann. Mary Ann Vaschico. I picked the wrong article that didn't actually say. There it is. My apology. Okay, it's Aka, Florida, not far from Miami International Airport. So you're telling me a 14-year-old girl traveled all the way up to Kent, Ohio, from the bottom of Florida for a protest? Yeah, pretty unbelievable story if you ask me. But then when you really look into her story, there is plenty of a rough home life, child abuse, and maybe even worse involved in this. I haven't dug too deep into it yet, but man, I'm telling you, it just screams everything that's happening today. We can imagine the government using teenage girls for...
Let's fast forward a bit, because you made some pretty interesting claims. The details of the massacre. Let me ask you this, like, as far as like conspiracies go, because I'm getting a lot of information from you. Some of it's historical, but not all of it is connected. Okay. And I don't want to criticize your research, because that's not what my show's about. But I will say it might be better if we take a few weeks and let you do some more research, come up with a more solid itinerary of what you want to talk about. I'm kind of at the edge of my seat, like waiting for you to tell me the weird details. So go for it.
Well, it was already kind of pre-planned. Ronald Reagan had made a quote saying, "If it takes a bloodbath, let's get it over with. No more appeasement." Now, it may not seem weird that the 14-year-old girl was there, but the fact that she was in a Pulitzer Prize winning photo in front of a man who was bleeding out all over the pavement, and that photo full of blood was put out into for all of us to see. My main point to it being a huge conspiracy is the fact that it was completely staged. The fact that all four dead students were Jews, and this day had been turned completely into a Jewish holiday at this point. Every year they do a memorial. It's all based around kind of Jewish ideas. I mean, there's a lot of connections I've made. There was even a May 4th students riot back in 1919 that started Chinese communism. So the day they picked and the events that took place, I think it was a huge ritual done to change what the energy from the 60s was into what the 70s became. It was a complete culture change in one event. Now, I will say this, but it gets very confusing because of the art that I found in the woods and how I do believe that this artist somehow has a connection not only to the day, because I spoke to the artist who put this portal art in the middle of the woods, but after he left Kent State, he ended up moving to New York City. And where he landed was this studio apartment owned by a Jewish deli guy. And it was in the exact same building right next to the CBGB. This artist's work is accredited for like changing culture in the 70s and pushing a lot of art elements that infused itself with the funk movement and the punk movement, along with a lot of other artistic and musical movements that were going on back then, especially within New York City.
So this guy, he's at Kent State. He just so happens to be the artist chosen to memorialize the massacre. And then you're saying ends up near CBGB's, which is obviously a big punk rock staple. Rock and roll was kind of soft and mellow and free love and chill during the hippie onset, and then throughout the 70s it got darker and darker. And your point is that this is kind of kicking it off in 1970, that there was a concerted effort to alter the music industry, and this was a part of it. Makes sense. And you know, I'm not against the Jewish angle. I think there's definitely something to that. But I will ask you to be a little bit more precise instead of just saying it's the Jews, you know,
Well,
because I've
I'm not
heard
saying
that
that. It's just
before. I've heard that before.
yeah,
Okay, you're going to tell me
no.
it's
I'm
the
not the guy
Jews,
who's the
but
type
what
of person
about
to
the
point his
Jews, you
finger
know?
at one thing. It's just,
Yeah, like
it's
what about
ironic
the
how.
Jews? Like, I get that there's four Jewish students. That's weird, you know? I get that. But I'm also kind of, all right, so is this artist Jewish? You said the deli owner that he rented from was Jewish, but that's New York City. I mean, you can
Right,
throw a
right.
rock and hit
Well,
a
I just
Jew.
said it because I reached out to the artist about his work in the woods, and I had a 2-hour long conversation with him about it, and he
Well, let me
told
ask you
me
this, though, because when you say it's in the woods, am I looking at the right thing?
this. They're hard to find online. Man, hold on. The only reason why I know about any of these is somebody posted in the Kent, Ohio Facebook page that they were looking for this memorial art in the woods. And I was like,
Okay.
what memorial art is in the woods? I've been back there 100
Yeah.
times. I've never seen art.
See, this
And
is the hook, buddy. This is how you start it. You say, dude, I see some weirdo.
oh
Look at, you know, you see, now you're hooking me in. Keep
dude,
going. Keep
I
telling
promise,
me.
because
I
I
trust
was
you.
either
I trust
too
you.
nervous or what, brother. Okay,
Hey,
so
you're new to this. Everybody's nervous when they, I mean, I was nervous the first 100 episodes of this podcast, bro. Don't worry. You're good.
The hooks, I hop on Facebook. I see this kid posting, "Hey, I'm looking for the Kent State Memorial in the woods." I'm wondering, what the hell is this kid talking about? I grew up in Kent. I've never seen a memorial back there, right? And paying attention to his post because he's asking people, "If you guys know where it's at, help me out." He even posts Google Maps about where he thinks it's at.
Okay.
Now, he was looking for it in like the fall, so it wasn't covered up by a lot of leaves or anything, but this thing's, it's in the middle of nowhere, and it was built like that to be there. It was placed there, sorry, I'm messing up my words. They placed it there, the artist placed it there for it to end up like that. He wanted it to look like a hidden ancient art piece in the woods, like some natives put it there or something. Well, I'm paying attention to this kid's post, and finally, about a week later, he finds it and posts pictures of it. The moment I see this art, Mark, my mouth dropped. I knew exactly what I was looking at, and I don't think anybody else does. The art consists of four stone-looking pillars and a big metal disc with a rip through it, big enough for a person to walk through. It's a portal. So I instantly started going, why in the hell is there a portal in the woods? So then I started looking into the woods in the park that it's at. It's called Towner's Woods. It was a farmland that it was given back to the city to be reforested and got beautiful paths. It's next to a lake and there's ancient Indian burial mounds in that park. Now, they're kind of hard to notice. Most people don't even realize they're standing on them when they go back there. But the most important one, it apparently had an Indian princess buried in it. And she was unburied back in the early 1900s. So with all this small amount of information, my brain was just firing. Okay, we got geomancy. We got portals. We have stone pillars. What is going on here? This is magic. They're using an event, a massacre, where people died and blood was shed. And now you're telling me this art is representing some kind of ritual? I just feel like they're using magic behind all of this. I know that sounds so far-fetched, but like I said, the numbers that were involved with the day, the number 13 over and over again, the fact that Kent State has multiple buildings on campus referred to as the Tri or Twin Towers, that there was just a whole lot of symbolism going on that day. Now, and if you're familiar with the King Kill 33 ritual, the gentleman who wrote that book pointed out that everything in that plaza that was there that day, down from the trees and the bushes and the names of the buildings, all were part of the ritual. I 100% believe they did the same thing on the Kent State campus.
It would have been in the same era too. I mean, it's not.
It was just a few years apart, and there was a lot going on in Ohio at that time too. Just a few months prior, our Cuyahoga River, not in our area, closer to in the Cleveland area, caught on fire. So yeah, there's a lot of crazy things going on around this time too.
Well, Ohio, dude. Ohio's big time. Cleveland, Cincinnati, the Society of Cincinnati was there before. The Society of Cincinnati existed before Cincinnati did.
Correct.
You know? Yeah, so what does that tell you, that one of their biggest cities has the same name as this Roman soldier that they're trying to commemorate through this patriotic secret society that's vaguely Freemasonic? Tons of people moved out to Ohio from New England with a ton of money back when everybody left New England to go west. And even Ohio was a part of Connecticut at one point, and it caused Connecticut and Pennsylvania to go to battle over the land in Ohio. They were like fighting to see who would win it. So yeah, man, Ohio's come up a ton in my research. It just seems like a strange place and a lot of different like oil, like that whole robber baron generation of people. They were down there and very influential, and so I'm with you.
If I'm not mistaken, I do believe Marvin Kent was from Connecticut.
Interesting. So he is the namesake, as you mentioned earlier, for Kent, right?
And he was a Mason. You should see his Masonic temple that he built on the top of the hill of Main Street, looking down on the river. It's immaculate. It's a beautiful building still to this day. Let's see here. Well, we got through some of the people who were involved that day. Where should we go from here? So yeah, to me, are you familiar with John Lee Chalbeck?
Yeah.
Okay. The reason why I got so excited about doing this is as I was doing this research, I started hearing John Lee Chalbeck hop on podcast talking about the number 77. I instantly knew he was going to talk about Kent State before he even opened his mouth and said, during the shooting on that day, there were 77 men of Troop G that were on the campus that day. G being the seventh letter. If that's not a Freemasonic marker, I don't know what is. So even John Lee Chalbeck agrees that number 77 being involved with this event screams nonsense. It's very Aleister Crowley. Now, and I even, the numbers game that they play, it doesn't stop, Mark. I even found news articles from 1951 where they were pointing out about they were talking about the progress of Kent State. There was 119,000 students, 11 head of faculty, and 33 buildings on campus. The other extremely interesting thing about Kent State is that I found was it was started as a normal school. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. A normal school was basically a school to teach teachers how to teach. Huh. Right around that time period when the Rockefellers and everyone were bringing in the Prussian school system. Kent State was, in my opinion, was set up to turn out the Prussian school system. I hope you find that one interesting.
Yeah, dude. No, that is strange. I didn't know it was called that, the normal.
Just normal. Schools. Just a normal school. It was one of
spelled
two in
like
Ohio.
The word normal?
Correct.
Huh. Okay.
Now, the number 13 is also involved with the number Kent State when it was started. Now, it was founded and started in 1911, but it didn't start taking on students until 1913. So again, I keep finding the number 13 popping up with this story. You might ask, why in the heck would they pick Kent State to do something like this? Something that's literally going to change not just the nation, but the world. There were protests all over the world after these four students were murdered. Not to mention there were two more murdered in Jackson State just a few, probably 2 weeks after Kent State happened. It just wasn't as big as the Kent State story. The Kent State story traveled the entire world. I believe that it happened on Kent State's campus because Kent State had just broke barriers with the LCD technology. Kent State was inaugural in creating LCD screens, a $1 billion tech industry.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I'm following. Keep going.
That, to me, that means important people were coming to campus. Important people coming to campus means more connections. Now, that still doesn't really tell you, well, that can't be the only reason why something like that would happen. But to me, that's a big standout. LCD, once Kent State was kind of done developing it, it had been picked up by RCA, and RCA ran with it, along with a few, I think 10 other companies that were birthed from the LCD creation. Where was it going from there? Now, I wanted to come back to this real quick. Now you ask, it seems like it was just one of those events that just kind of occurred by chance. But I even found a quote in this book that I did most of my research out of. It's called The 4th of May, written by William A. Gordon. It's called The Killings and Cover-Ups at Kent State. Let me see here. Part of some 30 ill-trained and frightened young Ohio National Guardsmen may have well been a premeditated barrage by about 10 experienced riot-trained guardsmen. Others included Indiana Senator Birch Baya, alleged that Terry Norman, an armed undercover informant for the FBI and the Kent State Police, may have deliberately or accidentally fired his pistol, thus sparking the guardsman's 13-second volley. More recently, several theorists have suggested that the tragedy may have been the result of a high-level government conspiracy. Journalist Norman Cousins was one of many to ask how, had a decision been made at a national level that the student demonstrations across the nation had gone far enough and that an example had to be made. So there were even FBI informants on the grounds that day. And I can guarantee probably bigger players like the CIA.
Yeah.
Now, on top of all this, all of the guardsmen were, for the most part, were taken to court. Not a single person was charged. Nobody paid the price for any of those people being killed, paralyzed, or injured. That another big reason why I look at this so harshly and it being not as real as they want us to believe it to be is there was also another event that Ohio was involved with. And that happened to be the 1986 Challenger shuttle explosion. One of those characters was from Akron, Ohio, right down the street. Miss Judith Resnick, who we all know is not dead.
Wow. Okay. Now you're getting into Yale University territory.
Yes, sir. Now, just a real quick sidebar. Miss Judith Resnick attended the Firestone Falcons High School. The name of that right there, knowing what happened that day that she supposedly passed, the Firestone Falcons. Firestone being the tire company. We got Firestone and Goodyear in Akron. That's where they were started and founded. So fast forward to present day, they rebuilt the Firestone High School. And I had to go to it one day for my son's wrestling tournament. This building has a black pyramid coming out of the side of it. It almost looks like a black cube coming out of the ground. It's the oddest thing I've seen on the design of a high school. Giving me the black cube vibes. And yeah, to me, with all the podcasts and researchers I've come across, when you see stuff like that in architecture, it screams they're trying to tell me a story, in my opinion. You just really got to know the story to actually pick up on it. Now, let's see here. I want to get back into Christopher Cosma. Like I told you, this whole day, May 4th, wasn't just a tragic day where students died. It literally changed the energy of the nation. It completely ended the civil rights movements. All the riots, all the protests stopped dead in their tracks. Christopher Cosma, the artist who put the portal in the woods, his last name means to inflict change. When I did more research on him, I found out that not only did he marry another very famous artist in New York City, he has artwork in 30 Rock, the Chrysler Building, the Empire State Building, the building he lives in, which is 1515 Broadway Avenue. And he also had a cross he made from rubble of the World Trade Center that was placed in St. Petersburg Church. That's the biggest Catholic church in New York City. So to me, he took metal from a building that was brought down in a ritual and created a cross out of it. That screams just energetics to me. Like he's messing with something there when you do that. I don't know what, it's really hard for me to explain what, but that there's something strange behind that. Taking an artifact like that and then placing it in a church. I wish we could show some of the pictures of his art, because most of it is like wall art made from glass, metal, stone, and crystals. The art that they put in 30 Rockefeller Center, the name of it is called A Tribute to Light. What do we refer light to as in the conspiracy world? The light bearer, Lucifer. It's a tribute to Lucifer in the main lobby of the 30 Rockefeller Center. And this guy was a part of putting it there. And I believe it's the Chrysler Building. The glass art that they have in that, it looks like a whirlpool of shark fins going around like a black portal. So I need to know why this artist is putting up portals everywhere. And what is behind all of this? In my opinion, a lot of these smaller events that take place, like Kent State, even though it hit the world stage, it wasn't as big as the Oklahoma City bombing or 9/11. But I feel like they have a game plan, Mark. And it's almost like watching a sports season unfold. You have the small local events that take place that only people in their town are paying attention to. I consider that the preseason. And then you have some bigger events that might take place in the city, you know, more portions of the state are paying attention to it. That's your weekly season games, right? You got a lot of people paying attention to it, but there's more people paying attention to other stuff elsewhere. So now you get to the playoffs. You got your big events like Kent State, Sandy Hook. What's some others here? Chernobyl events, right? The Cuyahoga River catching on fire. And those are your playoffs. More people are paying attention to that. But then you have your Super Bowl, 9/11, where absolutely everyone is paying attention. It's almost like they slow roll the energy to pull off their rituals to create the change they want for their future plans, whatever that may be, New World Order, the Antichrist, the certain religions taking over everyone else's, whatever label you want to put on it. I don't know, but it's blatantly obvious to me that these new cycles that we pay attention to are creating change by, well, you know, the old trope that the people at top can't really do anything. They can't manifest the way we do. So they need us to manifest it for them. They put this stuff into the news to get it into our psyche so we manifest their future for them. That way we're complicit now, aren't we? So I apologize. This is such kind of like a confusing story and it's all over the place. But I've connected so many dots throughout the years that once I found this story, it just pieced itself together, just not very nicely. I apologize for that. But it just makes so much more sense to me now what is being done to us on a daily basis. And what I really want to get to after we get more people learning about how their game plans work, it's kind of put up an opposite fight. It's all about intention. Their intention is to drive us away more and more from our purpose as humanity to get to their end goal of, I don't know, world domination, bringing whatever awful gods they believe in into existence. I don't know. But I think we can combat it once we really pick up on what they're doing to us through our own intention. I'm big on intention work. The more good intent you put into something, the better chance of it taking place. So if everyone's kind of sick of how the world's working and going for us right now, stop paying attention to the news, stop bitching about Trump, stop paying attention to Epstein, and just start putting your intent into making this world a slightly better place. If you see awful things happening around you and you have the time, go there and put intent back into the land. When I went and found this artwork in the woods, and when I took these pictures of them, I stood there for a good 10, 15 minutes and just put my own intent back into the area. Just by thinking, as cheesy as this sound, good, well-intended thoughts on how to bring good energy back to the community. Small changes at a time. And that's kind of something I learned from you, Mark, listening to the show for the past few years now. It takes a lot more people to raise the awareness and change the energy. So more people we can get to look at stuff like this. Hopefully I can do a better job next time at presenting it. I think we have a real chance at combating whatever evil face you want to place in front of you.
Yeah.
As the bad guys, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. First and foremost, Brain Supreme, the number one way to learn about microdosing is through their nootropic supplement. It gives you all the tools you need to take it to the next level. If you're curious about doing so, I highly recommend you tune in to my interviews with the man behind Brain Supreme. His name is Adam Schell. You could search his name wherever you listen to this podcast. Make sure when you visit brainsupreme.co, use the promo code CRAZY at checkout. We've also got Vibe Med X, our Shilajit source. If you're not aware, Shilajit is known in Asia as the medicine of the gods. It's an adaptogen, which means your body can take it and use it for what it needs. It's like curated for exactly what ails you. Really incredible stuff. And if you haven't given Shilajit a try, I highly recommend you do. Go to vibemedx.com. Check out the Shilajit options. Find the right choice for you. And use the promo code CRAZY at checkout to save. You know the drill. And last but not least, Above Phone. Listen, folks, you need to take your cybersecurity seriously, especially if you're listening to topics like one we're into today with today's guest. So check out Above Phone. This is not your average phone. These are basically as close as you can get to a working, functioning, jailbroken phone that is off the grid. So don't take it from me. Go to abovephone.com. Use the promo code CRAZY at checkout to save. If you're in the market for a new device and you actually want to take your cybersecurity seriously, do it now. Go to abovephone.com. All right, folks. Patreon.com/MFTIC. That's www.patreon.com/MFTIC. To support the show, get the ad-free version of the show, and get early access to perks like the new merch run that we're coming out with. The What List Epstein shirt is dropping this week, so be sure to check that out. We'll be right back to this episode after a quick break to our dynamic ads. Remember, Patreon, 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 ad-free, ad-free, ad-free. Don't miss out. Sign up today. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. I'm your host, Mystic Mark. And I want to bring attention to one of my favorite sponsors. That's Mood. Mood thinks cannabis should be accessible, affordable, convenient, and transparent. But most importantly, they believe, and I believe, in supporting the American farmers who make all of this possible. That's right, made in America. Like the outfit that I have on, my t-shirt, my hard Enco jeans, all 100% made in America. So why would the cannabis I'm smoking be any different? That's right, Mood created an online source for 100% federally legal cannabis grown on small, pesticide-free American farms. You can't beat that, folks. Go American, go local if you can. Keep it within our borders. Support this country. And I'm going to support you by giving you 20% off your entire purchase for first-time buyers only. Just use the promo code CRAZY at mood.com. That's mood.com, M-O-O-D.com. I'm telling you, folks, Mood stands behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code CRAZY. So head to mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. Remember to use the promo code CRAZY at checkout to save 20% off your order of American cannabis. Go and check it out today at mood.com, and we'll be right back to this episode in just a moment. Hey, this is Mystic Mark with a quick message about Hims and how they can help you men in the bedroom. That's right, ED can be uncomfortable, but that's why Hims provides access to a comfortable solution with an all online process and personalized treatment options. That's right, Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing you with access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. The process is 100% online, so there's no need to see a doctor. Just fill out the intake form on their site and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free. No insurance needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. With hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, Hims can help you find the ED option that works for you. Start your Hims online visit today at hims.com/crazy. That's hims.com/crazy for your personalized ED treatment options. That's hims.com/crazy. The featured products include compounded products, which are not approved nor verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality by the FDA. Prescription required. See website details for restrictions and important safety information. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Yeah, you know, I don't think you're off too far of the mark here. You know, like, you have identified strange aspects of a well-known historical event that might not have been grouped in with others. As far as, you know, conspiracies, we often look at the major events like the JFK assassination. But on that note, I believe you mentioned a couple points, one being that two of the victims grew up going to schools with the name JFK.
John F. Kennedy High Schools, yes.
Yeah, now,
I thought that was extremely interesting.
I do too. I'm not going to dismiss that, but I will say in my own hometown, there was a school with that name. So I would imagine it's fairly common for schools to name themselves after presidents, particularly JFK, who's been immemorialized more than any other president potentially. But yeah, I'm curious, beyond that, what were the other connections potentially between Kent State and the JFK assassination? Were there any people directly involved in both?
Not that I could find it. Well, that high school thing, it really stood out to me. And the fact that when I looked at the diagram of how JFK was killed, you know, if you can look up a picture, almost a map of the route he took that day in Daly Plaza. When I look at that, and then in this book that I have, they have a map also. And there's one on the website, and it shows the exact route that the troops took that day. And the troops walked in a perfect loop, which I've studied witchcraft. Walking in circles is very energetic. It stirs up the energy that they're looking for. The trees, the bushes, the buildings, everything about the JFK assassination and this shooting, they just mirror each other almost. They look very similar. I know that's far-fetched, but when you look into the occult, as deep as I have, and still isn't that deep, I'll tell you that right now, it screams ritual to me. And the fact that these two rituals mirror each other down to the trees that were there that day, I just have a feeling there's a connection. I feel like it was almost the same. Whoever wrote the playbook, the script for the JFK assassination, wrote the script for Kent State. I believe most of these events are all scripts. I know that's hard for a lot of people to hear. I can't hide behind the whole, oh, well, people may have died, so I got to be nice about it. I don't think people actually died that day. And the fact that I couldn't find a single bit of information on any of these dead students' parents other than their names and their ages was highly strange to me. I wanted to know what these parents did for a living. I wanted to know who they were connected to. I searched for days. I couldn't find nothing.
Huh. Now, the artist who's creating these portals, remind me their name again, and how exactly do you think someone would interact with these portals? What do you think the intention or the purpose of it is? Is it purely symbolic? The artist is trying to clue us in on something?
You know, is here's there the like thing,
a,
because
a utility to these? Do these portals actually affect the people observing them or the environment around them?
I do think so. Mark, have you ever looked at a portal? I'm just taking a good look at a portal. Or should I say an artist's rendering of a portal. It sucks you in. Now, this portal in the woods, this big metal disc, it's huge. It's big enough for you to walk through. So before it was hidden, and now it's been there for so long, the metal portal disc has fallen over. It's laying on the ground. But for years, people would go into that park, walk the trails, walk around the Indian mounds, and then by at some point walk through that portal. It may be subtle energy to 99.9% of the people on the planet, but when people are walking through something that's already had the intent of being a portal put into it, it's doing something energetically. In my crazy brain, I think every person who walks through that portal, their energy was powering one of their next events. I think it's down to that kind of science with these people, that kind of occultic science. They're smart. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Now, even down to the stone pillars. Now, like I said, I reached out to the artist. I didn't tell him that I was completely dismantling his art as a conspiracy to basically show that all these events are a ritual to Lucifer. When I was talking to him, he has no idea that I was doing that. But while I was talking to him, he told me what the pillars represented. They were supposed to be, the first thing he said was, well, they're not phallic, even though they're literally obelisks in the woods, almost like a witch's pillar. You can say they're not phallic. That screams phallic representation to me. But he said they were upside down, or like graves that were pulled out of the ground and set on top of it. And I thought that was really weird. So the more you kind of, I'll have to get you the pictures as soon as I can't find any websites that have it right now while I'm searching for it. And I can't find the Facebook post on my, I got it on my phone, just not on my laptop. I do have them in an email. I can send them to you in an email if you wanted to see them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think this is a good place to wrap up, and we can revisit the topic once you've done a little more research. And I definitely will include the photos in the podcast artwork if you'd like to send them to me so the audience can see them as well. But yeah, man, I think there's something here. It's definitely going to take some more research to get to it. There's a hook there. You definitely have something, but I would encourage you to go beyond the fact that the four victims of this massacre were Jewish. I think maybe that could be compelling if they also were all you know, maybe, I don't know, born on days that lined up somehow, or maybe even the astrology of the, you know, the time and place that this all occurred compared to when they were born can tell us more about what's going on. I mean, this is something that Ross Ben and Mike Wan both incorporate into their research. And, you know, as much as I appreciate you saying you've learned a lot from me, you know, I only ask the questions, right? So I would encourage you to, yeah, learn from Mike and Ross and others. Chris Knowles is another great synchromystic analyst, and take what you can garner from them and apply it to, you know, what you're looking into here. Because, yeah, if there is something here, which there likely is, you know, there's still yet to be information to find that really pulls it all together. Because to me, you know, I think this artist is like many artists. They're making really strange stuff. They're influenced by the occult. Why? I mean, I make art that's influenced by the occult. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm doing black magic, right? Like, it's just a part of the void of the mind and where your subconscious connects you to the world around you. Now, then again, I'm making occult art. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm connected to the Kent State Massacre, right? So, but this guy is. So, yeah, there's something strange going on here. And I encourage you and anyone else listening to dig further. And I especially like that you're digging around in your own backyard. This is what we talk about all the time on the show, as you obviously know and have mentioned, you know, as a listener and a supporter. Thank you for supporting the show. But there's people around you in your neighborhood who might have other pieces of the puzzle, you know, and it's not going to be like going door to door or barging into people's personal space to figure it out. It's going to be synchronicities of you just being out there curious, letting information come to you. And if you're open enough, you'll meet the right person who might push you along to that next insight, you know. And like Mike Wan and Ross Ben and all the other guests that I have on my show definitely have that quality and do that for me sometimes. But I'll tell you what, this past few months, what's really dawned on me is how powerful the connections we make in person can be. And I have met both Mike and Ross in person. They're actually some of the few guests I've had on the podcast who I'm, you know, grateful enough to say that I have met them in person. But, you know, it was a friendship built out of the internet, and there's just something else to that. I think when you go out and you dig around and you look around and you get curious and you ask people questions, that's when you find the really good stuff that's not online. So yeah, I hope we talk again soon when you have more information. And you kind of mentioned at the beginning that you don't have a podcast yet or anywhere really for the audience to go. But I guess since we're heading towards the end of the episode, I'd ask you, like, do you have social media that you'd like people to know about so they can contact you if they have information about this stuff? Because I'm sure people listening, there's got to be people listening from Ohio. I guarantee there's people listening who know about the Kent State Massacre. It's such a big story. Even if you don't know the story by name, you probably have seen the iconic image of a flower in a gun barrel of an M16 or M4 rifle, whatever it was. I'm sure the military guys will comment. Yeah, they'll comment. It's an M4, not an M16, you dumbass. So, but yeah, so that's an iconic image, you know. And as you pointed out, it's been reappropriated into the Watchmen, and I'm sure countless other places. Like, I think I remember like an episode of Dexter's Lab when I was a kid where something to that effect happened with a alien space gun that Dexter's sister put a flower petal or something in.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Like,
hey, and you just brought up another one with the, it was an M4 that killed four students, and the number we put those fours together.
What's M?
Death's door.
M is the 13th letter of the alphabet.
Thank you. See, there's another 13 for you. So
44.
There's something
behind 1 plus 3 is 4. 44. I'm with you, brother.
I'm telling you, but
well, the numerology it can go too far sometimes. I will admit, you know, that's something I've said on the show. But when you do it correctly and when you find the places where it lines up, it definitely adds that extra layer of holy shit, what am I really looking at here? Because listen, we live in a world where nothing's random, right? So when you see these numbers lining up, it's not a coincidence, not just random, it never is, nothing's random. So yeah, it means something. It doesn't always, it's not always the top level of importance on the scale of meaning, but it definitely means something. I think sometimes people who love the numerology stuff or the gematria stuff, either shade of it, they get a little too, you know, they put that on their pyramid of priorities at the top.
I got one more for you that I completely skipped.
But go ahead.
I'm going to tell you the distance they were all shot from, Wikipedia. And it was also in my book. One was shot, and these are the four who died. One was shot from 333 feet away. Another one shot from 265 feet. Add those up, you get 13. The other was shot from 382 feet. Add that up, you get 13. And the final one, and this one's interesting, instead of putting it as feet, they put it as yards. It was 390 feet, but that equals 130 yards, which that's the number 13 staring you in the face. So, yeah, the numerology can't go too far, but I'm telling you, in these ritualistic events, they put the numbers they need all over it, even down to the timestamps of when the soldiers started marching at 12:20, ended their march, and started shooting at 12:24, 4 minutes in between. Just keeps adding up. I can't help but to keep staring at the numbers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, man, it's strange stuff, and I'd love to see, like, a PowerPoint. I know PowerPoint's old school now, but, like, a Canva presentation, which is free. Anyone can make a slideshow on Canva for free. But I'd love to see you compile all this information into something like that, and we can make this into a video episode and post it for the audience.
That would be great. Mark, I appreciate you being patient with me, dude. I know you deal with a lot of different people.
Yeah, this is how the podcast rolls, man. I mean, one of my favorite things about the podcast is now the show's, you know, has enough people listening to it so that, you know, people reach out to me, which is great. You know, it saves me time. It also gives me a little bit of mystery and excitement. Oh, what's this guy going to talk about? It doesn't always go as planned, because how could I plan something that, you know, is so random in that sense? Nothing's random, though, so it's always connected. You know, that's the synchromysticism of it. It's like the less I spend time preparing, which seems oxymoronic, sometimes that leads to the magic. But, you know, it all depends on the guest. So that's why I don't mind giving you my advice, because I can see there's something here. And, you know, I know enough about my show by now to know what the audience is going to. And so, yeah, don't take my corrections the wrong way up from the front of the show there. But just, you know, my advice from me to you, because I can tell you were nervous there and you kind of got into a groove towards the end, which is cool. So obviously you have a knack for this, but it takes time. You know, like when I first started doing podcasts, I was definitely not as long-winded as I am now, or at least if I was, it wasn't something I could, you know, access while I was on a podcast. Like, just, you know, you think you're a great talker in person, and then you get in front of a microphone and it changes your personality completely.
Exactly,
right? You
know, that's so exactly what happened to me tonight, man.
No, well, and here's the thing: don't take that out, because you did a great job. You know, you don't need to take that as an out and say, "Oh, yeah, that's what happened to me." Because honestly, you did way better than that. I'm just explaining, you know, hey, this is something that every person who does a podcast, whether they're a natural or not, they have to get over that obstacle to some extent. I mean, it's like riding a bike, you know, you gotta keep pedaling. Sometimes you fall off, but if you just keep pedaling, eventually you figure it out and you do it. So I'm with you, man. We're going to figure this one out together. I don't think we've gotten to the bottom of it completely, but no. I look forward to talking to you and continuing the conversation so that we can link this up, because you know, it lines up with a couple things for me. It lines up with the whole fact that they use events like this and the Charles Manson thing and the LSD stuff to sort of disenfranchise the general public away from grassroots movements that the hippies were associated in. They also sort of derailed a lot of those grassroots movements with COINTELPRO. And I wouldn't be surprised if Kent State and this whole Kent State massacre played a role in that whole campaign to reel the public in and keep people away from, you know, grassroots activism or subversive political movements in general, because they want people to be controlled. They want people to fall in line. And the university system from the beginning was designed to aid the elite at the expense of the rest of us. So, you know, the fact that the average public, they just send their kids to college thinking, oh, this is what we do, this is what's right, that's just indoctrination, you know? So the fact that students are getting killed on university property, you know, to me, it's going to sound cruel the way I'm phrasing this, but, you know, you're electing to be a lab rat at that point, you know? Like, everything you're doing on that university is an experiment, including, you know, you are an experiment when you enter those sorts of areas, whether it's career-wise, or, you know, it's all, in a sense, an experiment.
Well, I'll tell you this real quick, Mark.
Go ahead.
As a child growing up in Kent, Ohio, you know, I was in a part of a very rich family. So my mom found this flyer. The Kent State campus was basically convinced my mother to bring me and other children for weird testing that I couldn't even tell you what it was. I was like 8 to 10 years old, and we would get paid a check from anywhere from $15 to $30. I just remember them taking me in a room, doing the headphone thing test, and then asking me a bunch of questions. I can't remember what the hell it was, though. All I know is I got candy at the end of it, and my mom got a paycheck. I have no idea what they were testing or what they were studying.
Wow.
Huh. I don't know if it was human behavior, psychology, or what. Yep. I got to go back and ask my mom, but I hadn't thought of it.
This?
For years. Say that again?
How old are you now? So you were eight then. So what year was it?
I'll be 39 in August.
Okay.
So that was mid-90s.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't think I ever was subject to that. But if I was, I at least it wasn't at Kent State. But if I was in some place out this way, I don't remember, but I'm sure, you know, if my mom was offered $30, she'd take it too, because $30 in the 90s went a lot further than it does now.
Yeah, that's for sure. Did.
I mean, shit, I had to sit in a McDonald's waiting for a tow truck the other day, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe everything costs this much. I remember being there as a kid. I didn't even eat there then. I don't eat at McDonald's ever, but
same.
But yeah, well, I was just kind of blown away because I remember how cheap it was when I was a kid, and even when I was a teenager, and I was like, still, you know, I couldn't drive yet, but my friends would drive and we'd go places like McDonald's. You know, it's like $2, $3 for a 4-piece, or not even 8-piece or something, and then now it's like $6, $10. I'm like, whoa. But anyways, I sound like an old man right now, and you're older than me, so geez, what are we doing here?
Well, you remember the old 4 for $4?
Yeah, exactly.
The moment that came out, I instantly said that's death food.
Yeah, I know.
Because if you're a fan of Krogh, he busts that out. 4 for $4.44 is death stores.
Yeah.
And you're advertising that on fast food? Yeah, you're trying to kill us.
Yeah.
I stayed clear.
Yeah, that's creepy, man.
Yeah. So you asked me for my socials, and now I don't have a podcast yet, but I did go out of my way to get on a couple of the podcast websites and start what I want my show to be. It's going to be called The Hometown Prophet. So I will have shows eventually. I plan on doing probably a 2-hour presentation on this where I don't miss any of the information. And on top of that, I plan on interviewing just people in my hometown, people who are doing new and exciting things, helping the community, starting businesses. I want to help promote them, just getting them on the podcast and talk about themselves and their business, as well as dive into some of these conspiracies that I find. And most importantly, it's the primary water story that I found myself in the middle of, trying to help a gentleman by the name of Joe Gilberti get out of jail for trying to bring the cleanest, purest water maybe known to man, and the closest thing to the fountain of youth we're ever going to get. He's trying to bring that to the public, and he was basically put in jail for his efforts. And that's going on right now. He's currently sitting in jail awaiting his sentencing. I'm in constant contact with his wife, who talks to him every day, and I've gotten her on multiple shows. Tomorrow we'll be going on NDS. Now, this isn't like a research project. This is me presenting a woman who has gone through hell and has a story to tell. And I'm telling you, it's quite the testimony when you hear what this woman has to say. Everything that their family has gone through and what their family has found is beyond most people's comprehension. But other than that, in my show, the eventual show, I have Instagram, Awakened Lion, and X, which I don't use too much, Awakened Lion 29.
Cool. Right on. Well, I would love to learn more about that story and maybe even have yourself and this person on to talk about their partner being locked up for what sounds like a perfectly altruistic act and something that we should be encouraging and championing rather than locking up and incarcerating people for accessing water or and then giving it to or wanting to give it to others. I mean, this, yeah, that's baffling. That's even a thing. So we definitely have to talk about that as well. But yeah, man, thank you again for joining me. I look forward to seeing where you go with all this information. And thanks again for supporting the show, dude. I appreciate your support and appreciate you reaching out to me. And I wish you the best of luck as far as the new podcast goes. Hit me up if you have any questions. And with that, folks, thank you for tuning in. Support Matt on his endeavor to get to the bottom of this. And this new podcast, Hometown Prophet, is that going to be spelled like prophetic, right? Obviously with an
correct, you know? Not like profit earning money. Yeah.
Cool. I thought
so. That would make a great segment, wouldn't it?
Well, hey, yeah, if you can help people make money in their hometown, I'm sure that would be a very lucrative podcast, but
absolutely.
That sounds like some kind of scam anyways, but either way, great stuff, dude. Appreciate you joining me to break all this down. And obviously this is just the beginning of your journey, but I encourage you and I hope you join me again once you've gotten a little further down the road and we got some more stuff to look into.
Thanks, Mark. You've been a gentleman and a scholar. I appreciate it.
Oh, that's too much. Now you're overdoing it, but I'll take it. I appreciate it. So with that, folks, thank you all for tuning in. I love you all. Sorry that this month has been a little light on episodes, but we're making it back into 2 days out of the week, 4 weeks out of the month. That's 8 episodes at the least every month. I think we can make it happen this July. So with that, we'll catch you on the next episode. And until then, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.
Try to remember to keep on trucking, listen to the sound.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.